Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here we go. This is it.
This is Top Flight Time Machine. I am Andy Dawson.
I'm Sam Delaney.
Oh, no, so what?
Oh, I'm Sam Delaney, so
fuck
what? Start again.
No, you fucked it. We'll start again then. All right, we'll start again. This is Top Flight Time Machine. I am Andy Dawson. Pow, pow, pow!
I'm Sam Delaney, so what?
I hadn't finished. I was dropping my new catchphrase in there. You got a weird...
What is it again? What's your catchphrase?
Start again. This is Top Flight Time Machine. I am Andy Dawson. Pow, pow, pow!
I'm Sam Delaney, so what?
There we are. Third time looking.
Now, our respective catchphrases tell a lot. Tell a very interesting story about both of us. You're pow, pow, pow.
Right.
You're all about attention. Look at me. And I'm very kind of self-effacing.
Nah.
So, yeah, I'm Sam Delaney. No big deal.
Nah,
don't make a big deal out of it. I'm just a humble human being.
Mine is more about energy and vigour, if you like. Pow, pow, pow. And it looked better on a T-shirt as well.
Pow, pow, pow.
Yeah.
I don't know. So what sort of sounds cool? I can imagine the indie kids wearing that at one of their disco nights.
Well, put them both on sale.
Yeah, so what? Not impressed.
Give it a month for Mike to catch on, and then we'll put them out on T-shirts and we'll see who sells the most. Because we're both winners.
We've got a new T-shirt. Yeah, we will have a T-shirt contest. We've got a new T-shirt in the pipeline, actually.
Have we?
I don't want to say too much about it, but one of the cunters is involved, and I think, put it this way, I'll be fucking buying a few for myself.
Okay. I know nothing about this, but it sounds good.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. It's a design by one of the cunters. It's a design you've seen from quite a long time ago, and then suddenly, off the back of the tour... I kind of thought, well, that seems to be a popular phrase or saying.
All right.
Why the fuck haven't we got a T-shirt done of it yet?
Okay.
So we'll do that. But going back to So What, it's, I bet this is a band that you don't like, The Strokes. They had, their debut album was called Is This It?
Yeah.
Right? And Oberon War, who I can highly recommend as an entertaining writer, his memoir was called Will This Do? Which I thought was quite funny.
Right. Yeah.
So I feel So What follows in that kind of,
It follows in the tradition
canon,
of Oberon
canon
War.
Of work. Yeah, yes,
yeah.
I do, yeah.
The literary tradition of Oberon War, who, of course,
correct,
was the son of Evelyn War.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he was. And I think that this podcast comfortably sits beside any of the work by either of those authors, certainly by Oberon War.
Mine is more in the tradition of 1960s Batman, so you know
it is, yeah. And I think that you should set the bar higher. Speaking of that, actually, I've been thinking about getting doing a little bit of the old poetry reading. I've never really read any poetry
in this podcast. Once a week we're gonna do a poetry episode.
Yeah, fucking hell. Actually, yeah, why not? That is what I'm going to do.
Good.
And let me tell you, this isn't going to be clever. I'm not going to do the obvious gag of reading a fucking Pam Ayres poem, or I think we've done poems before, like schoolboy poems, like My Friend Billy Had a 10-Foot Willy, any of that stuff, right? He showed it to the girl next door.
Yeah.
She thought it was a snake and hit it with a rake, and now it's only 5'4". All right, admittedly, that is hilarious. And not as hilarious as when Viz published an obituary for the author of that poem. And it was one of the funniest things ever. In fact, now I think about it, almost everything we've ever done is knowingly or unknowingly a rip-off of something we once read in Viz when we were kids, right? And I'm not ashamed of that. And And now I've just realised that our history of the coins and stuff was very much based on that obituary that was written for the author of My Friend Billy Had a 10-Foot Willy. Well, no, I'm actually going to read. I'm actually going to read out a poem by one of the real greats.
Okay.
Shelley, right?
Who?
Keats, Yeats, not Shelley out of the TV programme in the 80s.
Sorry, I thought you said Jelly. Oh, and by the way, Shelley, the TV programme's well worth a deep dive. It's a fucking fantastic show.
Can you remind me of what Shelley was actually about? Because it was one of those shows I remember being on, but I never could quite get... And I can picture the fella's face.
Yeah, it was...
But I couldn't get to grips with what the point of it was.
It was Howell Bennett, and he was just a miserable cunt who was on the dole. That was it. It's brilliant.
That is great.
He was a miserable cunt.
Talk about different times. You'd never get that commission these days, would you?
Of course you would not. Unless it was a documentary.
Or it was like a something gritty about the plight of the left behind.
Yeah, he was a miserable cunt on the dole who didn't want to have a job. It was fucking great.
So what did he do with his day? Was it a bit like Curb Your Enthusiasm?
It was just kind of, he had like sort of friends and he had a girlfriend in the early series and they just all just sit around and just, he would just bemoan the state of modern society and he'd occasionally get put into situations he didn't want to be in. Yeah, it was good. I've got DVDs of loads of them.
How does the theme tune go?
Oh, the theme tune is the best. When I used to do the late tackle on TalkSport with James Brown, the Shelley theme tune was our outro music.
Always.
At the end of every week. And I still have just really fond memories of it. Just from every time I hear it, just takes me back to doing that show. I'm going to play it now and I'll drop it into the episode.
Do you miss doing that show with James? Do you sometimes endure doing an episode with me and sort of think, oh, nah, I wish I was sat in Talk Sport Towers with James now?
No, because I go to London to do it.
That's how you're making me feel. I'm doing this in my spare room. Again, you're not making me feel that much better.
I'll look back in the future and I'll listen to the thing from Crown Court and I'll have the same feelings about that and doing these podcasts.
Oh, what, when you're doing your podcast with Susanna Reid?
Yeah, because we'll have some different music.
What will you have then?
Probably the theme from Screen Test, I reckon.
Rockford Files.
Here's the theme from Shelley.
Yes, I do remember. Immediately. Oh, God, it sounds fucking miserable, doesn't it?
It's so laconic. It's fucking great.
Yeah,
Listen, it is.
It does make me feel a bit sad, though, Andy, although I acknowledge it's a good tune. Oh, I think this is by Belle and Sebastian.
Sebastian have based their entire career on the Shelley theme tune.
Yeah. Hi, this is Steve Lamacq, and live in session on Six Music this afternoon. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Belle and Sebastian with their new song, Shelley. Lads, tell us about, what inspired this song, I suppose, yeah.
Well, I was on the dole before I formed the band. And I picked up a DVD of the series 3 of Shelley in the Oxfam shop for £1. And I loved the theme tune. So I just thought, I'll go form a band and just do that theme tune again and again and again and again. And, you know, it's paid off. Here I am today.
Yeah, it's a great idea for a song, I suppose. Yeah, great.
Oh, yeah, we are. My daughter recently, when I was in London with my daughter, we were in FOP record shop. And she saw a Belle and Sebastian record. I went, oh, Belle and Sebastian. And I just went, oh, you're not into them, are you? And she went, look, I've told you before, stop doing this. Stop criticising my tastes and things. And I was like, whoa,
fucking hell.
So this is the thing now. You're not allowed to criticise your kids' tastes and things and life choices and stuff like that. You're not allowed to trigger them. Yeah. I mean, I was a better teller that I had the first two Belle and Sebastian CD singles and I think I've still got them somewhere. I was going to bequeath them to her.
I was into their early stuff.
Yeah, I was into them before you were born, actually.
Before they sold out. I was into them when they did the theme tune to Shelley.
On every single one of their fucking songs.
My daughter gets annoyed if, like, we'll 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock is the hour in which the boy's gone to bed, but the girl's still awake, and we will watch a usually a US sitcom together.
Nice.
And over the last however many months, fucking ages, we've been working our way from beginning to end through the US office.
Oh,
and
good.
It's a good show, right? But like most sitcoms that go on for a long time, the quality starts to... I mean, they all follow the same pattern.
Mm.
The quality goes up for... It starts at one level, then it goes up in the middle, and then towards the end, it goes back down again.
Yeah.
So if it were a graph, it would be the shape of an N, a lowercase n.
Okay, yeah, good.
So obviously we're now in the late episodes when what's-his-name's left, the Michael Scott character,
boy,
you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Steve Carell.
Yeah, it? Steve Carell's left. And it's not just because he left, because the other actors and characters are very good. But I just feel with these shows, the writing becomes lazier.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It becomes like a production line, doesn't it? Mm. It's like with The Simpsons being probably the best example of any of this phenomena.
Yeah. I'll say this. The Simpsons gets a load of shit these days, and probably rightly so, because it's not what it was. But if you watch a new episode, you'll still laugh 4 or 5 times in it.
Maybe, it's still, but there is some...
It's just they set their bar so high in the first 10 series that...
It's so upsetting, because what you hear sometimes on The Simpsons is you think either something's really lazy. Oh, fuck. I've just pulled the nose off a fucking figurine of Mario. I think it's fixable, mate.
Live Mario mutilation on this podcast.
Look, I'm going to show you this. I mean, this will mean nothing to the listeners, but frankly, fuck them. I do this for you, Andy.
Okay, look, let me see.
Look at this cunt, right?
Yeah, that's a matter.
See
that's
his
like
nose
a
now?
Cock for a nose, that. It's off. It's gone.
Luckily, it seems to
Does
fit
just
quite
plug back
smoothly
in?
Back.
Yeah.
The moustache holds it on.
A dab of glue
anyway,
and it'll be fine.
It's either lazy, right, or it's... Or it's like some kid who wasn't born when The Simpsons started is now working on the show and is doing jokes that are bad, like sort of a bad pastiche of good Simpsons jokes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like they've watched a load of Simpsons episodes that were written by, you know, fucking Conan O'Brien or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, right, I'm going to do one just like that because he's my hero.
So
but
like
they just do a shit version.
Simpsons cover versions almost now.
Bad Simpsons cover versions. Yeah. So that's what upsets me about that. But anyway, you're watching The Office and I will occasionally tut at an incident like that. I'll laugh, but then if I tut like that because they've done a crass joke or a lazy joke or a joke that I just think
you're critiquing it from your position as Britain's top journalist and also someone who's written a lot of comedy over the years.
I've written a lot of comedy. Yeah. I am a noted critic, right?
You used to do the papers on Sky News, so, you know, your critiquing skills are well-honed.
Mate, do you know something? I was reminded of this yesterday in conversation with my brother. I used to do the singles reviews in the NME. Right. I used to review singles.
Yeah. What? When was this? When it was a glossy magazine?
I wrote for the NME in the early noughties.
Well, I wrote for the NME from 1995, so I wrote for the NME before you did. So.
Well, you probably would have written for it when it was better than when I wrote for it, to be honest.
I only wrote in the thrills page, though. I only wrote fucking made-up shit.
I used to write... I mean, my main job... for a period in the early 90s was just writing about music. I wrote simultaneously for The Guide, the NME and Q magazine about music.
Wow.
And in the singles reviews in the NME, once every few weeks, you'd have a picture byline, this week with Sam Delaney. Mm-hmm. And I'd just write a load of... But the thing was, to be honest, in the early noughties, I probably liked Beyonce.
Yeah.
And, you know, other basically the music of Pharrell Williams and anything that he was producing.
All good,
But in the NME, I often had to... The NME sent me to New York for the cover story to interview Scissor Sisters. I went to fucking New York and just hung around with the Scissor Sisters for a few days. I did.
I would have just... And then I wrote, if I'd offered that now, I would have just said, ah, you're all right. No, thanks.
Well, I've got to admit, I really liked them. Like, I hadn't pursued it. They rang me up and said, do you want to go to New York to interview Sizz Sisters? I was like, fucking yeah. Because they'd been on the radio and they just sounded like sort of camp disco music, which is one of my favourite genres of music. So I was like, fuck yeah. And the record company sent me a, not joking, right? This sounds like payola, but I didn't realise it was that at the time. The record company sent me over airplane tickets before you had an e-ticket. And they said, give us your home address. And I was living in a flat. I said, send tickets here. And do you know what they sent in with the tickets?
What?
A fucking envelope with some cash in it. What? With US dollars. Yeah. 100 US dollars.
Nice one.
I said, what's this? They said, I bet spending money for when you're there. Expenses.
Nice. Glory days of journalism. Mean,
yeah, wouldn't but actually now. Look back now, it sounds a bit corrupt, doesn't it? Right, but anyway, I wrote a nice interview with them because I liked them anyway.
Yeah, Sam Delaney's single of the week in the NME this week. It's Cotton Wool Tuesday by Belle and Sebastian. Sounds a lot like the Shelley theme tune, but if it ain't broke, don't fix it, eh, guys?
I must admit, I didn't. I used to write about music in the Guardian Guide, and as a result, the NME started commissioning me to write about. But the thing was,
it'll do
in the Guardian Guide. I could just get away with doing jokes, yeah. Right? But in the NME, I felt as if it was incumbent upon me to know a bit more about music, or at least have the capacity to pretend I knew more about music, which I didn't. So, you know, I had a few laughs, but I was never going to be the next, what you call it, Nick Kent
no.
or Charles Shaw Murray.
Can you imagine? Couldn't handle, yeah. I couldn't stand the heroin.
Yeah.
Getting back though to, camp disco music, which you were talking about, which I also massively love. I was at a Tynemouth Market a few weeks ago and I picked up some vinyl, and one of the things was a promo of a compilation album that came out. This was on the album only came out on CD, I think, but this was a promo vinyl, triple vinyl, and it was Dale Winton's Disco Divas. Now that might sound crass and that might sound trite to you, but listen to this track list. This is disc one. Chic, Everybody Dance, Stacey Lattershaw, Jump to the Beat, Maxine Nightingale, Right Back Where We Started From, Weather Girls, It's Raining Men, Chaka Khan, I'm Every Woman, Gloria Gaynor, Never Can Say Goodbye, Pointer Sisters, I'm So Excited, The Emotions, Best of My Love, Gwen Guthrie, Nothing Going On But The Rent, Donna Summer, Bad Girls, Yvonne Elliman, If I Can't Have You. I could go on and on. The quality level is that high all the way through it.
I would say it's you've glorious. Just named, yeah, I mean, half of those songs would be in my top 50 singles of all time.
It's fucking brilliant.
I mean, and that is an outstanding track list.
It's on Amazon, £4.62, double CD. I've just had a look. And it's not on Spotify because I wanted to play it when I was on holiday last month. But
yeah, but you could easily assemble that playlist
someone's
on Spotify.
Already done it. Someone's made a playlist.
There you
go. So it's on there as well. It is so good.
Jalapeño.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Jalapeño.
Right, what should we talk about now?
Well, I don't know where that leaves us all. I think today's episode is supposed to be the mailbag dive.
Yeah, we're going to do some letters and stuff. I've just had a one that came in earlier today. Do you want to hear this? It's a double header, a diss and dat, and a cunning dad on a roof. And it's from Phoebe Thompson. She says, hi guys, long time listener, first time emailer. This is my Dr. Diss and Dat story. This story takes place on English soil. When he was about 12, my brother was taken to the doctors because he had a stabbing pain in his lung area. After a brief look up and down at this boy in agony, the German doctor announced, "If he has pain and it is hard to breathe, there's no problem. If he falls down and cannot breathe, then we have a problem." The doctor then sent my bewildered dad and brother on their way. "Go, you must go now." And she says, the next day, my mum took him to A&E where he was diagnosed with a punctured lung.
Great.
Quality
and
stuff.
Funny enough, Germany is the least diss in that country in the world.
You'd think so.
So it just goes to show, you can have a diss in that attitude anywhere. It doesn't just have to be the Mediterranean or the Latin countries.
And Phoebe says, part two, I also have a dad on a roof story. This is really good. I was in the garden with my mum recently when my dad marched out and handed us a clothing catalogue he'd marked up with some dresses he might buy us. This in itself is very curious. Yes. So he's come out, he's given the clothing catalogue. Here you are, girls. Here's some dresses I might buy you. Have a look.
I've picked some out. Look through this catalogue and pick what ones you like.
I've been through it,
and I've picked out the ones that I think would suit you best.
I'm the best judge of this sort of thing, obviously. So he's handed them the clothing catalogue. And then Phoebe says, we'd been browsing for a few minutes and dismissing his choices, obviously, when we heard a noise and looked up, startled to see him sprawled on the roof with a broom in his hand. My mum, of course, immediately reminded him that he was banned from roof activities and shouted at him to come straight down. So he's got the catalogue, he's circled some dresses they might like as a diversion, and while they're looking, straight up on the roof.
He thought to himself, what's the best way to distract a Doris? I know.
Dresses.
I fucking love them.
Pictures
of pretty dresses are like catnip to the average Doris. Once you get them looking at them, they'll be there for hours. You can get away whatever you want.
I can get up on the roof with me broom and have a good shufty around.
I know a geezer down the pub, right? And he managed to have an affair. He brought other birds back to his marital bedroom and just distracted his wife from what was going on with pictures of lovely pretty dresses.
Fantastic. Speaking of roofs, this is tenuous, but it's fan of the podcast and journalist Simon Price did a tweet this morning to say that it's Mark Boland Day, apparently. I didn't know there was a Mark Boland Day, but it is, and quite right as well. And he posted a video clip of Mark Boland in Sheffield in 1974, 75, I think it was, just after the heyday, but when he was still pretty big. And a radio journalist had gone to a pub to interview Mark Boland, and he'd said, he'd done a shout out and said, you know, kids, come along and meet Mark Boland at this pub at lunchtime. So hundreds of kids had turned up. Obviously, Boland had to flee from the scene, so he ended up doing the interview with this guy on the flat roof of the pub.
Nice. Bit like a sort of a budget northern version of when the Beatles got on top of that building in Savile Row.
Yeah. So Boland's on this, the footage shows you Boland on this roof being interviewed with all these screaming kids down at ground level, and then Boland flees the scene in a knackered old Ford Cortina. It's great.
Lovely.
I'll retweet
that. I'll look it up. Well, you know I live In my hometown here in Leafy Barnes, is where he met his unfortunate end.
That's true, yeah. Yeah.
So the memorial for Mark Boland, to be fair, is kept alive year round. I pass it most days. And it's actually now right beside where Gary Lineker lives.
Oh. Do you think Lineker moved there deliberately because of that? Or
I think he might be a big T-Rex fan.
Yeah.
And, funnily enough... Gary Lineker, I think, has been listening to the old Top Flight Time Machine, because you might have seen he was in the press last week talking about how he can't be triggered very easily anymore.
Yes,
he's
that,
a man of a certain age.
He says
I don't like sex, I prefer flirting.
That was it. I thought it was a cuddle, but it was flirting, wasn't it?
Good mate of mine is writing an article about that.
Right.
And he said, I saw this thing that Lineker said about preferring flirting to sex, right? And so I'm writing an article about it for the newspaper. I was wondering if I could speak to you about it as well, because I heard an episode of Top Flight Time Machine where you said something about not being triggered very easily. I was like, You heard right. I don't know if I heard right. No, you heard right.
Try
give us a call immediately.
Bring
on
it
this number. Yeah. I got plenty to say on this subject. I'm with Lineker all the way on this, not for the first time. We think very alike, me and Gary.
We live nearby. We should probably do a podcast together.
Yeah. He likes T-Rex. I like T-Rex. He's not easily triggered. I'm not easily triggered. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I'll go up there. I'll go up to the memorial later on.
Yeah.
And
take a picture. Get a picture of yourself standing next to it with your thumb loft. And, you know,
yeah.
give us that.
Paul McCartney style.
Yeah, put it on the Instagram.
Yeah, I will. And with any luck, I'll bump into Lineker while
you
I'm up there.
Probably will. He'll be busy up there that day as well. I think it's the anniversary of the death or something. There'll be a queue.
I bump into him all the time around the area. I saw him in the fruit and veg shop the other day.
Did you?
Yeah, but it was only me and him in there, and it's only a small place.
Right.
And I was, you know, having a bit of banter with the fruit and veg man.
Yeah.
Sir John Veg. Sir John Fruit and Veg.
Did you go all coy when Lineker came in?
Nah, I ramped it up, if
did
anything.
Did you? Yeah.
Yeah, hoping that he'd go, hey, you seem like a pretty good, fun guy.
Are you into T-Rex? What?
Are you into T-Rex? Yes, I am. Are you local? Yeah, I live around just around the corner. Let's become firm friends. Fucking hell. Yeah, definitely Gary Lineker.
I've just launched a T-Rex night down at the church hall. Every Wednesday, 7 till 9. Come along. Bring your records.
I'm looking for someone to help me run it.
I'm looking for a wingman for the T-Rex night at the church.
Let's say I'm looking for my musical equivalent to Peter Beardsley. Now, you'll remember how he was perfect. How he was just like you. Great at setting things up. Thought on the same wavelengths as me. But, by comparison to me, was hideously unattractive. So I didn't feel threatened by him in that sense.
Kept his mouth shut most of the time as well, which was fantastic. We dovetailed beautifully.
Honestly, in all honesty, hand on heart, not even joking, I think that I do really have spent a huge amount of time fantasising about becoming friends with Gary Lineker.
Right,
It'd be like the ultimate best mate,
yeah.
Wouldn't he?
Would he?
It'd be a real best mate upgrade for me. I mean, luckily, my best mate would never listen to this podcast, which is one of the problems with him.
Yeah. Which is why you're looking to trade him in.
It's one of the reasons I'm not satisfied with his performance. He wouldn't listen to the podcast. If he did, he wouldn't get it. He'd just go, why were you saying all those things about T-Rex?
You've probably got to wonder why you're actually friends then, really, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't really think
and
that.
So I'm thinking, does he like T-Rex? I want an upgrade. Yeah, he probably
does.
Right. Yeah.
That's something, I suppose.
I mean, if anything, yeah, his music tastes strong. That's one of the main ticks in his favour.
Okay.
Is that he probably would know more about T-Rex than me. And but Lineker, yeah, I encounter him quite regularly. And of course, I have met him. Like, years ago, I've fucking gone on about it before because it was one of the best days of my life ever, was when I got to spend a day behind the scenes at Match of the Day.
Mm.
It was the day when Trevor Brooking bought me a fried egg.
It was. It's known now forever as the day Trevor Brooking bought you a fried egg.
But I also spent a lot of quality time that day with Gary Lineker.
Yeah.
And the photographer, this is quite funny, actually. The photographer, I can't remember his name. But he was a top bloke, really good photographer, and he set up a little, you know, we were at the BBC, the old BBC building, but he set up a little sort of pop-up studio there with a white kind of backdrop and all the rest of it to take a lovely shot that was used in the magazine of Lineker, Hansen and Brooking, because at the time they were the three staples of the show, right?
Right.
And then I said, can I be in this shot as well? Can I have one for myself? And he went, yeah, of course. So I step in. He takes the picture of me, Lineker, Brooking and Hansen. And, you know, it's just a little keepsake for me, long before smartphones. And
yeah,
us
I was
going
to say, how did he get this to you? Did he get it developed and then send it in the post to you?
Well, all the pictures used to be sent into the mag as transparencies.
Right.
Right? And then you would look at them all on a special light box.
Oh, yeah, I've seen all that. I've worked in magazines. I know what that's all about.
And then you'd mark the ones you liked with a China graph.
Yeah.
Right? One of them special white waxy pencils. And then you'd send it off to the processor or some shit. I didn't know what happened after that. And amongst the transparencies were the ones of me and the lads.
Did you stay behind and mock up a front cover of the magazine yourself with you on the front?
Probably,
and then get it
yeah.
sent off to the printers?
I got three or four of these printed up. and then my mum, at the time, it was such a big deal. I was quite young when this happened. Mm. She had it framed. Nowadays, there's a million and one picture of every cunt with famous people, right? But back then, quite rare.
Big thing.
My mum got it framed and hung it in the spare room, which in itself was quite weird. But recently, I mean, maybe just a year ago, I reckon that I did that feature in about the year 1999, right? Only about a year ago, so practically 20 years later, my mum, for some reason, I don't know why, has hung this picture in her kitchen, right, in quite a prominent position. And every Sunday, me and all my brothers and our families go round there and have Sunday lunch at my mum's every Sunday, which is in our old family home that we live in. And we all sit in the kitchen round the table, and hanging right there in full view of the whole table is a picture of me, Gary Lineker, Alan Hansen and Trevor Brooking. Quite a large framed picture. Are there pictures of my siblings? No.
No. Have your siblings met similarly important people?
Probably, yeah. Well, they all make adverts. They've probably met people like that, yeah. Probably there's photos in existence.
Is this some kind of divide and conquer power play by your mum?
It's eccentric. And
it's something.
I don't, you know, listen, on the one hand, I don't shy away from being the favourite or being the best in any situation. I enjoy that sensation. Yeah. But in this instance, it's such a weird power play that I almost feel uncomfortable about the picture hanging there. I'm not going to take it down. But it is weird that we all sit in the family kitchen every Sunday and there's a big picture of me and Gary Lineker. Imagine if I ever became friends with Gary Lineker. Because I'm not going to be the sort of dope that's going to go up to Gary Lineker when we're in a fruit and veg shop and go, all right, Gary, remember me? Yeah, you remember. I'll give you a little clue. Yeah. I'll give you a little clue. 1999, White City, BBC Studios, Match of the Day. You remember now?
Sam!
Yeah. But people do that. You see it being done to those people all the time, like they think they're going to remember. So I'm not going to do that. So imagine if I became friends with him, but I didn't mention that episode all those years ago. I was too cool to mention it. And then once we get, eventually he's good enough friends with me to come round maybe to Sunday lunch at my mum's.
Yeah.
And he's like, this is weird. Why is there a picture of 24-year-old you and me on the wall that you've never mentioned before? Oh, that old thing. I forgot about that picture. How could you have forgotten about it? Your mum's got it hanging on her kitchen wall, you mental cunt.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. We're no longer friends.
I think your mum's playing a long game, though. I think at some point the picture's going to get changed for one with one of your brothers and a celebrity in. She won't say anything about it. She won't say why. She's changed it. It'll just happen. And your time...
To be honest, I almost think she should.
Your time at the top of the tree will be over. And you just got to deal with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she should.
Yeah.
I think it would be a shot in the arm for them. Like maybe Cass and someone.
And it'll be a wake-up call for you as well, because you've obviously done something to warrant it being taken down.
Speaking of Cass, right? Just quickly.
Okay.
I said in passing to my wife, oh, it was good when we were out in Club Med because there weren't any sort of serious conversations, were there? Like where anyone starts talking about, you know, boring stuff like politics or anything or work.
Yeah.
We were just all having a laugh and dicking about the whole time. She went, yeah. And I went, why'd you hesitate, darling? She went, well, you went to bed at like 8 o'clock most nights before people got really stuck into the booze. And I was like, yeah, that's true. I said, well, what happened? She went, well, there was one night when your brother Cass talked me through at great length the four different ways in which you can get off a murder charge. because he knows it from his legal course that he's doing. Now, listen, right? But I know what you're thinking. What are the four different ways in which you can get off a murder charge? Well, it's very simple, I'll tell you. Number one, insanity. Number two, sausages.
Number three, burn your fingerprints off. With acid.
And number four, you wear a mask pretending that you're some other cunt in court. And then they let you off. And then only once you're off down the road in a taxi to the airport, you take the mask off, like in Scooby-Doo.
I got that one from John Timbrell. He can't fail. Oh, man, we might need to find out more about this. Look, Sam, we've run out of time. I'm going to quickly, before we end, another update on Yanni. Memories buying costs from Adam Mazey. And this is the one that we did in an episode and then took it out because we were going to do it at the live show. And then we didn't do it at the live show. We did the different one instead. But that's not important.
Okay. Right.
So here we go. Important. You've heard this before, but it's not been on the podcast before. Three stories from Yanni. Another three. We had three in yesterday's episode as well. Chapter one. As Yanni drove my wife and her family down a typical shit road in Kos in his open-top Jeep, they discussed amongst themselves how bad the roads are. Yanni says, "Ha! Fuck the roads!" Then takes an immediate sharp right straight into a random part of the forest. All this time, they had no seatbelts, almost being thrown out of the car, my wife clinging onto Yanni's dog, and Yanni laughing like a madman. That's chapter one. Chapter two. Walking along to Memories one evening, they spot a 4-foot snake slither right across them. My father-in-law, terrified of snakes, immediately sprints towards the bar, telling Yanni of the tale. He laughs and says, "Why didn't you shoot it?" Probably because he didn't have a gun.
Don't carry a gun, Yanni.
Yeah. I'm not you. As they settle down for dinner, Yanni appears behind them and slams the 4-foot snake with a bullet hole through its head onto the dinner table before laughing hysterically. Again, my father makes his excuses and leaves. Chapter 3. In the middle of Memories was a huge cage which had turtles in it. One day my wife walks in and notices the turtles were gone and have been replaced by 2 squirrels. When my wife inquires about them, Yanni simply chuckles and replies, "Ha ha, I catch them." Yanni then starts flugging small tubs of nuts to dozy English tourists to feed the caged critters.
And what happened to the turtles?
We don't know.
We don't
Adam,
know.
Adam, if you're listening and you do know what happened to the turtles, let us know.
They probably ended up on that night's fucking pizza.
Yeah. And Adam sent another email in since then, which came today, so we'll read that one out on Friday's episode, I reckon. That's it, mate.
Quality stuff.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, an enjoyable episode.
Was,
I'm sure you'll all agree,
time
listeners.
Time for us to fuck off now.
Will you be playing us out with Shelley, or have you already
played it earlier in the show. We're going to play it as usual with Crown Court. Ta-da!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.